You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, everybody, welcome to this week's edition of the Terry's Talking Podcast. I'm David Campbell, your host, and I'm joined by Mr. Terry Pluto. Terry, we're taping a couple days later than usual. I was out of town for a couple days with some friends right into the draft. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. We had a thing last week. I went on a mini rant about the phrase, don't sleep on.
Yes.
And then you said you invited fans to send in some kind of pet peeves that they have about things they hear on sports TV or sports radio or read. And we got one from Brian Kirkendall. I think you might have heard of a couple other ones too that you want. I don't know if you wanted to drop those in or not.
My problem, Brian, is I forgot them. It really was.
But we'll carry them out. They're not going away. So, but we did get one from Brian Kirkendall, who's a longtime listener. And he says, hey guys, my contribution to the band list, when people do the, and then they add an S to last names, it's usually a broadcaster, and they say something like, he has the chance to go down as a Cleveland legend, joining the Dwayne Kuipers, the Bingo Smiths, the Don Cockcrofts, the Mike Junkins, all legends in their time. So, yeah, you hear that quite a bit, but thanks for that, Brian. That's
I
a good
like
one.
That because a couple of younger writers, I heard them, this is sort of scout talk or something originally, and I heard them say this on a radio show, and I didn't mention to them. I was like, well, you know, there's only one, whether you want to talk about, there's only one Joe Charbonneau or there's only one Manny Ramirez. You know, it isn't like there's a grouping of a whole bunch of these people, because if it were, it'd be a lot easier to scout and evaluate them because they would all be coming right out of a box. So that is a big one. Look, Brian gets an A-plus on that.
Yeah, it's like a murder of crows or a flock of geese or whatever. Yeah. So anyway, if you want to send those in, before I forget to give the address out, the email address to hit us with comments, questions. We're still taking foul ball stories that we're trying to work through. We'll have some of those later on. sports@cleveland.com. Hey, Terry, we're going to start with the Guardians today because I'm trying to think of a bigger story in Major League Baseball right now than your nicknamed the Go-Go Guardians.
Yeah.
And we have a letter to kick us off here from Neil in Jamestown, New York, longtime listener. He says, hey, Terry, are the Guardians the real deal, fool's gold, or somewhere in between at this early point in the season? Their roster moves have played out way better than I expected, and several players who underperformed last year are performing well. That's from Neil. So let's get into the Guardians here. Terry, what do you think about what you're seeing so far? They're, 17-7? They're 2.5 games up on the Royals in the division.
How about that, what you just said there? 2.5 games up on the Royals,
who are on the come. They've got a lot of good young prospects coming up, and they're putting it together.
After a lot of dismal time. All right, I will ask you this. Who's the biggest surprise for you?
Well, and I know this player is close to you and Roberta's heart, Terry, but Stephen Kwan, I thought he was going to have a good season, but he's doing some things that I didn't know that he could do, really, in terms of consistency and quality at-bats. I think yesterday they lost to the Red Sox, but he got a single in the third inning. I think I was reading the game notes. It was his 35th hit of the season. He's tied with Jose Altuve for the American League lead after he got that 35th hit. And he's had 35 straight plate appearances without a strikeout. That's the longest active streak in Major League Baseball. He's tearing it up, and I don't know if it can continue, but he's surprised me. He's playing way above what I even thought he could do. But I know you got something you want to get into. Why don't you go?
Well, with Quan, they really worked on him in the off season Tyler Freeman was in some of the same sessions to pull the ball more. If you're up 2-0 on the count, really take a good swing at it. Don't just swing for contact, that kind of stuff. And it's created more extra base hits. And Freeman's had some extra base hits too. I think he's got 3 home runs. So that's been a thing, but it hasn't, especially with Quan, led to a lot more strikeouts or a drop in on-base percentage or anything. He just seems to be getting better. And I did say to Roberta, and I use this my notes, so what if this guy's turning into an all-star? Because remember, you're talking a Gold Glove left fielder. So you have that. You have a consummate leadoff hitter. And now if he's hitting, you know, starts hitting over 300, an OPS over 800, with a bunch of doubles and some home runs, you know, is there something special? And other than, if you look at him, he had a big April when he first came up a couple years ago. Then he had a slump in May, survived it, and then, you know, just stayed and continued to play well since. Even last year, he had a pretty good year. It wasn't as good as his rookie year, but it was good. And so, yeah, just because he's getting better there. But not one person, my biggest surprise is by far is the bullpen. I did not see any of this coming other than Quase. I figured if Quase would always come back and be good as long as they just don't wear him into the ground. Remember, Quase had been in more games the previous 3 years total than anybody else in the majors. And on top of that, just about ninth innings or save situations in nearly all of them, or even sometimes a harder situation, you come in with a guy on second, the score is tied in the extra innings, which is a tough one. But you would turn around. I like the idea of Hunter Gaddis. I thought he had a chance. I didn't know he was just going to be almost locked down. Tim Herron, I had lost faith in because I thought fundamentally he was all over the place in terms of his windup and delivery and, you know, a lot of walks. And he has been terrific. And, you know, they've been getting some out of some other guys too, but where you have those three, Sam Hentges is supposed to be coming back fairly soon. I'm anxious to see if they can continue to do it because, you know, Paul Hoynes and Joe Noga have been writing already that they've been riding the starters. If they get to the fifth inning, you almost want to stop the game and give them a ball. I mean, it's rarely that you're getting any innings out of these guys, but the bullpen has been, another reason, by the way, everybody goes, boy, Steve Volt's doing a great job, is when you go to the bullpen, just about everybody does a great job. It looks like you're doing a great job.
And I was just looking at some of the ERAs of some of the relievers, Terry. Class A, 0.75. Herron, 0.79.
Yeah. Just,
I mean, this is like a bullpen of kind of epic proportions if they continue this in terms of Cleveland history. I mean, I think we were talking last week about you have to go back to the 1970s to find some of these numbers if they can keep this going. Sandlin, 1.69. And the other thing, these guys are
to me, Sandlin always looks like he's in a mess. But then you look at the numbers, and Sandlin struck out a ton of guys, too. I didn't know the ERA was 1.6 on him, though. Jeez.
And the other thing about the bullpen, Terry, I think that this bullpen has a lot more heat to it than, you know, when you have Eli Morgan, whose main pitch was like, you know, his get-out pitch was his changeup. Yeah. I mean, you've got some guys, Cade Smith can bring it, Gaddis can bring it. The strikeouts, I was just looking at the strikeout-to-walk ratios per nine innings here. Gaddis, 12.3 strikeouts per nine innings to 2.3 walks. Sandlin, 12.7 strikeouts per nine innings, 2.5 walks per nine innings. Cade Smith, 13.9 strikeouts per nine innings, 4.9 walks. So you talked about some control problems, but these guys are getting strikeouts at key times in the game and keeping guys off the bases. So I think you're right. This has probably been the biggest surprise on the team so far, right?
And I know that Tom Hamilton, he and I are very close. We were talking in spring training and that, and I brought up the bullpen, and he said, yeah, it's one of my biggest worries too. So we've been totally wrong about that. And you want to be totally wrong when things go right, as opposed to, boy, I thought that was going to go right, and that went sideways and upside down. So that's been a big deal too. I've been really pleased with Freeman, and now and then I get these emails from people who love Miles Straussel. And okay, Freeman once in a while isn't as smooth as Miles or whatever out there, but he's played a really good center field. And while his batting average isn't that high, he has shown some pop. And I what I like about what they did there, they put him in the outfield and left him there. And they put him in the lineup and left him there. Remember the couple of spring trainings in a row, they would get this brainstorm about the 1st of March. So they've already been in spring training like about 10 to 15 days. Let's put Rosario in the outfield. And then he would go out there. And Arizona, it is hard to play the outfield there. It is windy in the desert. And the sky is all blue. And I remember way back when the tri played in Tucson, I would go and we'd catch fly balls or whatever. And you would actually see this called a black dot effect. It almost looked like a black dot, the ball coming there. And it was hard to judge. So they would try Rosario for a couple of weeks. Then they kind of go back to short, back to the outfield. And by the way, he's playing primarily the outfield with Tampa Bay. The other day I was looking, he was hitting like 340 for Tampa Bay. Because he's, you know, Rosario's a good athlete. And if you have a good athlete, you could, and a willing attitude, Rosario's always had a winning attitude. Remember, he was willing to do whatever they wanted. He could do it. Well, Freeman is showing the same thing. So that's, I hope they, it seems like they learned something from that. If you're going to do it.
Commit to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to mention, Terry, and I think it's because the Red Sox are in town.
Yes.
And I know what Guardians fans are going to say. Like, the Guardians have to play smart and fundamental baseball to compete. But until you see a team that doesn't do that, you don't appreciate what the Guardians are doing.
Yes. I mean,
so the Guardians are I looked it up. The Guardians are 10th in Major League Baseball. They have a 986 fielding percentage, right? The Red Sox are last at 977. But aside from that, like, how many times – during this series, have we seen, you know, there's a throw coming in from the outfield and the Red Sox can't get it out of a glove and get it home to challenge a play at the plate. Or there's a double play ball and they can't turn it and that keeps an inning going. And you don't see the Guardians have a lot of those problems. It's impressive because with a new manager and a new way of doing things, like, they are very good at the little details right now. And, you know, I was reading during spring training, I think Hoynsey had this story. They even changed. You know, when you're growing up, Terry, you played baseball. Yeah. What would you yell when the fly ball was coming to you and you wanted to call somebody off? What would you yell out?
Mine, or whatever.
Mine, I got it. So the Guardians have changed that because you get two guys yelling, I got it. And it kind of it becomes like a cacophony. Their thing now, and I think this came from Kai Correa, the field coordinator. He's like, maybe it was Stephen Vogt. I don't know where this came from, but now they're saying, get out. Get out, get out, get out. And that doesn't mean – it means get away from me.
Yeah.
That I have the ball. And instead of having two guys yelling, I got it, running toward each other, they're yelling, get out. And that sends a different message. And it's sharper to the ear. And, like, yeah, that's a tiny detail. But we've seen Cleveland players running into each other or standing looking at each other because they thought somebody said they got it. And I thought that's almost just a good example of how minute the details are that the Guardians are paying attention to.
And how cataclysmic it could be, because remember, that's when Josh Naylor ran into, and I forgot who was the shortstop.
A
collision.
Yep.
And it he had broken tibia and all that other stuff and really set him back. So that's the thing. By the way, Ahmed Rosario's hitting 341. That's why I just kind of wanted to look to see there. And Freeman, you know, he's got, I believe, 3 home runs. He's got some doubles. So it's really good. Now, the other thing that I've been pleased is real early and all that, but Esteban Florio is kind of intriguing. You know,
how so?
He's got some power. He's got some athleticism. He started poorly. He's been hitting better of late. And he's actually come off the bench and pinch hit and done some stuff. So, look, this is not about, oh, they found another star. But when you're in Cleveland, you're always looking for an outfielder who might have a little bit of power and might have some potential. And so Florio, that was why they traded for him. They traded Cody Morris, a guy I like but could never stay healthy, for this guy. And to their credit, again, spring training, he was awful, Florio was. I remember talking to not just media people down there, but some of the Guardians people, and they finally just said, if it's just based on spring training, we couldn't keep him. But we have our reports. This is our guy. He's feeling a lot of pressure. He's swinging at balls like over his head, you know, all these things. And we saw a little of that early in the year, and then he started to hit. So let's see what they've got there. But that's intriguing. And overall, they do have this just nice sense about them, kind of like they did in 22 when they surprised everybody. The difference there was that starting rotation made just about all of their starts that year. They had very few injuries to that rotation. Where this year, my goodness, I mean, what, Gavin Williams, now he's what? They're giving him a cortisone shot. He's going to rest for 7 days. That was came after he told Hoynes, like, I can't wait to get going, I guess. You can never believe these guys on injuries, by the way.
Yeah, that's baseball. Like, everybody was like, oh, the starting rotation is going to be good, but the bullpen's going to be a, you know, real challenge, and it's been the exact opposite. That's like, that's baseball in a nutshell, right?
Well, if you look at, all right, if you talk about the rotation, all right, who's the ace right now?
Man, I don't know. Like,
yeah, that's it. It should be Bybee, but it's not. He's been up and down. And then, you know, you're looking at they got two starters, Carlos Carrasco and McKenzie. It's like they're riding a unicycle on a tightrope. I mean, they're just like, you just feel like the whole thing's going to fall apart at any moment. McKenzie can say whatever he wants. He's not healthy. You know, that elbow, he's pitching with a partial tear of whatever the ligament is. And it's just, I was at the game the other day in Oakland, and that wasn't good. When they played, I think he pitched against Oakland, it wasn't good. He got through it, but it wasn't good. And Carlos, I give him this. The guy takes the ball. He knows he can barely throw 90 miles an hour. I love Carrasco. He's working the corners. You know, he's like a comedian who goes out there with about 47 different jokes, hoping like four of them work, and he doesn't get too shaken. And I just hope he stays healthy. You know, he pitched fairly well. It was a little better than this with the Mets 2 years ago when he won 15 games. He was throwing like 92. But this is how he averaged a little over five innings a start, and he got through the season. But, you know, you're really looking at that this is going to be hard. And the unfortunate thing, I was trying to find a starter in AAA. You know, they've got Curry down there who should be up and bring him up. But, I mean, Ben Lively, what's that about? Where did he come from?
Yeah, it's some story. And he's given them, I think he had a huge outing on Tuesday, if I remember.
He's had two good ones in a row.
And coming out of the weekend, they needed some innings, and he's given them some great innings. Because you're right, Terry, it can't go on like this forever, right? Like, they need to get more out of the starting rotation.
Yeah, they do.
But and when some of these guys get healthy, but talk about coming out of nowhere.
Well, Ben Lively, I looked it up because I remember when they signed him, I looked it up. By the way, in the KBO, the Korean Baseball Association, if you remember from the pandemic time, his career record there was 10-12 with a 4.14 ERA. In the majors heading into this year, he was 8-17 with a 5.05 ERA. Last year with the Reds, he was 4-7 with a 5.38. One thing it looks like what he does is he does take the ball. So, and he looks like he works his way through the innings. And so there's that. And, you know, we'll see how all this goes. But thank goodness for Ben Lively, which is something I never thought I'd be saying. I remember when they signed him, I looked at that and go, oh, great. You know, some guy with a 5 ERA. Then I looked, he had a 4 ERA in Korea. I'm like, okay. Adam Plutko's been pitching, I think not this year, but the previous 2 years he pitched in Korea. I used to like him with Cleveland, and he had some really nice years in the KBO. Not that anybody but me would be paying attention to that, but
yeah, you always wonder how it translates from the majors, from the Korean League to the majors, or even from the Japanese League to the majors.
Korea is considered a step below Japan. It'd be like AAA. But, you know, a lot of guys have gone there, and then a few have revived their career. So All right, what else?
I'm sure they have analytics on all that too, in terms of translating the one league to another. So, so it's, you know, it's interesting, Terry. I think Guardians fans have gone from like, oh my gosh, when are Kyle Manzardo and Chase DeLauder coming up, to where I think they're enjoying this team and how they're playing. But I know you've been looking at some guys in the minor leagues you wanted to talk about in terms of who's doing what.
We'll try to do this every week during the season, kind of a little bit of a farm report. All right. I've mentioned this guy in my notes 2 weeks ago. His name is Andrew Walters. He was a closer from the University of Miami. This is his first year in pro ball. And you could tell they like him a lot because they've started him in double A. All right. Andrew Walters has pitched 8 innings and struck out 19 at Akron. His ERA is 1.13. He's walked 3. Andrew Walters could be up by July because I could see them moving to triple A. Relievers come up fast. Cody Allen did, I remember a few years ago. Some of these others, they can do that. So that's my double A. And Chase DeLauder, my guy, I remember I was on him early last year. And in spring training, he hit like 450 or something. 190 at Akron with a 560. He's got 8 walks, 13 strikeouts, 1 home run. I had somebody from the Guardians tell me that they started him down there because he said everything came so quick and so fast for him. Because last year's his first year of pro ball. He opened it, played a little bit in that the Goodyear Arizona League in the summer. League. No, before that. There's a Goodyear League, a little bit there. Then they moved him to Lake County where he hit like 350 or whatever. Then the fall league, to your point, where he mashed the ball again. Then the spring training. So – as they said, and of course, at James Madison, he was hitting 400 or whatever it was. Even Cape Cod League, he hit. He's always hit. And they want to see, you know, I don't care how great you are, at some point, you don't hit. And then what happens? Because this is now, remember, he has this weird swing where he moves his back foot. Now, do they tinker with that, or do they leave it alone? So we'll keep an eye on. I'm not writing off the water, but I just wanted to mention that. Now, when he flipped to AAA, Kyle Manzardo had a little bit of a slow start, and he's just been crushing the ball ever since. He's hitting 292. He's got 5 homers, 12 RBIs, 962 OPS. Too bad he didn't play the outfield. You know, he's first base and DH. So, you know, what I like is 12 walks and 15 strikeouts. So I remember when they traded for Manzardo, I was very excited about it, and especially when I dug up some tapes and I saw he's a left-handed hitter with a lot of power to left center. And the other guy is Jonathan Rodriguez down there. He's probably the next Oscar Gonzalez, but I'm going to ride on that horse again. I'm going to hop on the Rodriguez horse. He's hitting like 305, 977. This is a triple A and 5 home runs. So we'll see how they go. All right. One of my guys, Juan Brito. Oh, boy. He's probably going to end up back at Akron. He's hitting 197. I'm really surprised about that. I thought he would do better, more controlled of a swing. Miles Straw, 244, 634 OPS, 0 home runs. I mean, Miles just doesn't hit. I mean, all right. We mentioned Walters, the other guy for call-up, Nick Enright. And I believe I mentioned him last week, but if I didn't, I should have. Relief pitcher, this is AAA now. 9 innings, 19 strikeouts, no earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk. So I think with Walters and Enright, you might have some more power arms. And given the state of the starting rotation, what are they going to be doing to start some of these games, David?
Pitching bullpen games?
Bullpen games, baby. Could be Nick Enright taking the ball after the national anthem or who knows who. So somebody like that. So that's a little bit of a last guy. I was trying to find a starter. The only other guy that pops out, and he's still a ways away, is Doug Nikhazy. He was their second round pick in 21, and he started slowly, but this year he's thrown 10 scoreless innings at Akron. So because they're gonna have to find somebody to pitch 4 or 5 innings, and it's a shame they don't have the same pitching depth, because they called them all up last year, and then you turn around, you know, the Gavin Williams is hurt, and you know, McKenzie, it's a scary situation, and Bieber's gone. So there you go. But there are 10 games over 500, I think, right now, or whatever it is. And and playing, you, I mean, the old line is don't beat yourself. They're not beating themselves. They're not walking a lot of guys, and they're really good defensively. I've been waiting for, it's a little early for it to come out. Fangraphs sometimes has a thing called kind of a defensive efficiency thing, but I was told by a top person from the Guardians that those numbers are just so right now, they're just not enough sample size to go on much of anything. But that's, but just watching it, the eye test, the outfield's been good, and the infield, Andrés Giménez is just sensational.
Another guy who's playing, he's playing better than everybody thought he might.
What do you think's going on with what do you think's going on with Lindor? I'm very serious. I just know he's not. I'll give you the stats in a moment. What's your theory on him with the message?
Hey, you know what? We've talked about this, Terry. People like coming to Cleveland who like to play baseball and just immerse themselves in the game. Yeah. When you go to New York, again, I'm not in Francisco Lindor's shoes, but you've got the tabloids ripping you every day if you don't get a hit, and the talk shows there, the sports talk. Like, it's a different – you are held to account every at-bat there in a way that you're not here. I don't know if it's gotten to him or – you know the way he played, Terry. He was so joyful.
Yeah.
About baseball, and I wonder if he's lost some of that going to the Big Apple where it's just a different world. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I will say this. The last seven games, he's 10 for 28. He's hitting .357. So he's starting to come around. But overall, he's batting like .254. He's got four homers. I do think one of the things that happened there is he wanted to become more of a power hitter. He really now he hit 30 home runs here, but it seemed to me like he was – the little bit I watched, he was swinging for more power there. And then, as you said, the spotlight. So it's always interesting to watch all those. And then, you know, then we got Jose Ramirez, just continues to be Jose Ramirez. I mean, I know he's not hitting as high as you want, but heck, he's usually terrible in April and May anyway. So, you know, what's the difference? And I believe you have your Guardian stats there.
I think I have some. Yeah.
Does he lead the team in RBIs? I think he leads the team in RBIs.
Yeah, I don't have that here. Sorry. I did have one stat.
Go ahead.
I did have one stat I wanted to share that I pulled out. Baseball references a thing called extra bases taken percentage.
Okay.
Which I thought is really interesting. And it kind of, again, it kind of feeds into the Guardians doing the little things. It's the percentage of times that a runner takes more than one base on a single and more than two bases on a double when possible.
Ooh,
it doesn't take into account like where the ball's hit or, you know, if it's an infield single, but the Guardians are 10th. And again, small data sample, right? It's early in the season, but they're 10th in Major League Baseball at 46%. So again, fielding, taking the extra base, you know, all that little kind of stuff helps win games as the Guardians always say. So,
okay. Josh Naylor. Right. Josh Naylor, 20 RBIs, Jose, 19. All right, who do you think is third? And even fourth.
Steven Kwan?
No, Giménez is third with 14. Tyler Freeman, fourth.
Wow.
12. So there you go. And by
the
way,
that's working out, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah. I mean, and it's like, you know, you look at that, and Gabriel Arias is sitting 298. And maybe this, you know, I was among those who rolled my eyes when they came out at the start of spring training. And I remember I had a conversation with Antonetti casually, and then he did it at his press conference of, we're not bringing in some more of these guys on one-year contracts because we want to give some more advance to these guys because, you know, they believe that maybe they bail out too soon on some of the players who've gone on and played elsewhere. So they wanted to look some more at Arias. That's why they kept Arias and Rocchio, to see what's going on. And then they did this Freeman thing in center. And so you look at that, and there's Arias, who, by the way, did not have a good spring, and he had a terrible winter ball year, and he was awful last year. Maybe it's kicking in for him. So we'll see. But this is exciting. We should enjoy this.
All right, Terry. Well, the Guardians have they play Boston today. We're taping this on Thursday around noon. They're playing last game against Boston at 1:10 today, and then they head out on a road trip to Atlanta and Houston.
This is one that Hal Lebowitz, the late Hal Lebowitz, will put on the list. I remember I'm a young baseball writer in Cleveland. He comes over to my desk. He looks up. He says, There's no such thing as a road trip. A team is either on a road or on a trip and walked away. I have never written or said the phrase road trip again, and that was 1980.
All right, we'll put that on the list along with
Hal's no list of no road trips. You're either on the road or on a trip.
They are out of town.
That's
to
okay.
Play Houston, Atlanta, and then Houston, and then they're back next week on Friday for the Angels, which will be interesting for sure. So, all right, Terry, let's take a break. When we get back, you've been writing about the Deshaun Watson tariff that the Browns paid for with draft picks and everything, and that ends tonight with the draft and tomorrow and this weekend. But I want to ask you, what do you think was a worse deal so far, the Deshaun Watson trade for the Browns or the Russell Wilson trade for the Broncos? So maybe we'll get into that and more. We'll have some foul ball stories. We're going to talk some Cavs playoff basketball when we get back on Terry's Talking.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're back on Terry's Talking. I think we'll go to the Cavs first, Terry, since they're in the playoffs and the Browns are kind of not in season. But 2-0 lead in the series against the Magic. Terry, they're playing tonight. Game 3 down in Orlando. Chris Fedor, our colleague, will be down there covering it. What have you thought of the Cavs so far in this series?
You know, for a while, it's like we don't want to have a big lineup. Not just here, but also when Minnesota traded for Rudy Gobert and they had Towns, which is their version of Mobley and Allen, it's like, oh, you know, this is awful. It won't work. Everybody's supposed to be shooting three-pointers and be greyhounds running around. And if you have a big guy, all he does is set picks close to the basket and dunks, or he must shoot from the three-point line. That's it. Well, if you look at New York exploited that matchup last year, because they had smaller, tougher guys getting rebounds. And the lessons that were learned there by Allen and Mobley, you know, have carried now. The Cavs are doing the same thing to Orlando. But if you look, as we're speaking here, I believe Minnesota is up 2-0 on Phoenix, which is a super team with Kevin Durant and all that. And the size is bothering Phoenix. So my view is, Mobley's game keeps expanding. I ran into Kobe Altman right before game 2. We were just kind of walking by. So we talked for like 5 minutes casually. And he is, granted, Mobley's his guy. He drafted him. And actually he said to me, because he knows I like Suggs, he goes, Terry, you know, your guy Suggs is turning into a player too. I said, no, you did the right thing. He goes, I know that. But I was glad he said that as opposed to, because I like Mobley, but I really thought Jalen Suggs would become a kind of a powerhouse point guard leader. And he may still turn into that. He's probably going to make an all-defensive team. But you could see the difference. But Mobley really worked on his jump shot during the time that he was rehabbing from that knee injury, because he could go out and do things, and it looks better. And he's tougher now. He's not looking at the officials when he gets pushed around and things. He's developed a nice little right-handed hook. So that has been a thing there, too. And he's always had the great instincts on defense. See, the reason they can play Allen and Mobley is because both of those guys could jump out and defend a guard or small forward away from the basket. What they had to do is just basically get a tougher mindset on the rebounding. I mean, Jared Allen, the first two games, had 38 rebounds, 38. And Mobley, you know, has been in double figures. We'll see, you know, as the series goes on. But they learned the painful lessons of the New York series. And Allen also has learned, remember, you and I don't know how many years on the podcast, going, shoot the ball more. You're a career 63% shooter. Take the shots. He's still – I looked at the tape of the game the other game two yesterday, and there's still twice he got the ball like 6 feet from the basket. He threw it out to the corner for somebody corner three. No, 2 points is better than zero. And, you know, just take it, score, run down the other end.
So the big guys, Terry, I just want to give fans a little bit of a look behind the scenes. Our guys who do the Wine and Gold Talk podcast, they have long days, right? They get there for warm-ups. Mm-hmm. They cover the game. They're there till 2, 3 in the morning. They do a podcast when it's all over. But I thought they made a really interesting point the other night about the big guys' effectiveness with the rebounding this series the other night after the game. And, you know, they were talking about Jalen Brunson kind of lives in that 8 to 15 foot range. Like he tantalizes you by dribbling in there. And that made the Cavs big guys go out on him to help, which left the boards wide open. And I thought they made a great point on the podcast the other night that there's nobody like that in Orlando. Like,
no.
And you know, defense, you've been watching basketball for a long time too. You know that interior defense starts with exterior defense, right? And if you keep guys from getting into the paint, Jared Allen or Evan Mobley don't have to leave their rebounding assignment to go help. And that shores everything up around the basket and the rebounds come. And I thought that was a really good point. But, and also on Mobley, like, he's a different player than he was a year ago, right? You're seeing
Well, sure. And as Kobe said to me, he should be a senior at USC.
Absolutely.
I mean, just a fact. I mean, everybody goes, Paulo, you know, Banchero, who I love his game. It's funny, even they took him number one, but you know, some of the people weren't assigning him because you know why? He shoots medium range shots. We don't like that. We want dunks and we want 3-pointers analytics. Okay. But Mobley's only a year older. So you see they're both really young players. To your point, and then to see what you think, when your big guys go out, then your small forward shooting guards gotta get in there and rebound. Max Strus, 9 rebounds each of the first two games. I believe Mitchell had 7 in game 2. I see Mitchell and Strus coming back sometimes to sort of poach the ball out of the, like a big guy's kind of backing the ball into towards the rim, and they drop down. They just tie them up. So I didn't see that last year. Josh Hart did that continually to the Cavaliers. So there's growth in that area. And Strus is, even when Strus, I remember I was told this, but I had to see it to believe it, that even when Strus isn't shooting well, he's really a good player. Well, even when Strus isn't shooting well, he's really a good player.
And I was just looking at Mobley's numbers, Terry. The thing is, he's last season in the first round, he played 37.6 minutes per game. This season, he's playing 34 so far in the two games, right? But his scoring average has gone from 9.8 to 16.5. Yeah. And which means he's being more efficient in the minutes he's getting. Last year, he might have attempted 1 3-pointer, I think,
one.
In the Knicks series.
He took one.
Okay, because it says 0.2 per game that he attempted. Yeah, that would be one. It must be 0.25. He's attempting 4 per game so far, and he's making 1.5. And like you're saying, that opens things up inside. It's a different dynamic for Jared Allen when he doesn't have Evan Mobley 8 feet from the basket. He's got Evan Mobley 16 feet from the basket or further. And the spacing just seems like it's a lot better this time around.
And it creates a lot of room for Jared to go blowing in there. That's the thing. He comes firing in from the foul line somewhere after such of those offensive rebounds. So that's been a thing. An amazing thing is, you know, Strus and Niang can't make a shot to save their life from the outside. Now, okay. Niang shoots pretty much. He has two things he does. He takes a standstill three, or he rumbles to the basket like a guy in a beer league and bounces off of somebody and throws in a bank shot. That's his game. But Strus can do all these running off picks and everything else to get open. They're not doing it. I don't know where this went. And they're not doing it even when Mitchell is running the offense. It's like disappeared. And JB's been complaining about lack of movement. Well, call some plays. You want some movement? Put Merrill in the game. He never stops. And just kind of go with it. And I understand that all these teams play fewer guys in the playoffs. They just do. But you have a chance, especially in these games, which have not been that tight, to try some of that stuff to get some more of that movement back.
And to your point, Terry, I think game one, JB played 9 players, and that Sam Merrill only played a couple minutes, so that's barely 9. It's more like 8, which
yeah,
was
he played
game
4
two.
Minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, game two was 8 players. No Sam Merrill, no Tristan Thompson, no Marcus Morris Sr.
Yeah.
Do you want to see JB Bickerstaff expand the bench a little bit tonight?
I'll tell you what I would do. If Nian continues to struggle, you could cut his 20-some minutes down and throw Morris in for 10 of those. I don't think you lose a thing. You might gain something. Tristan's just good to be there. Like right now they're kicking butt on the board, so I don't really need Tristan, you know. But a game where they're being bullied and all that, that's when I need Tristan. Now, I've been very critical of Garland in different notes and things. Now, I have to, as they say, check the tape. I looked at it. 9 turnovers is too many in the 2 games compared to 12 assists, although he's made some really nice passes to set up the big man. But Garland, to his credit, in a series where it seems like nobody could shoot well from the outside, is shooting 50 from the field and 47 on threes. And a lot of those, because this is tapes I kind of reviewed the last 2 days, have come at key moments where it seemed like the Cavs are not, just couldn't make a basket to save their life, and he would hit some three-pointer. So I've got to give him credit for that. The way these games are being called, it's tough on Garland with the bodies bouncing around in that, because Suggs and these others, I mean, they're kind of half mauling him and taking the ball away. Of course, the Knicks did the same thing too. So that's something he's going to have to deal with. But my view is this: if you're having trouble with Garland bringing the ball up, and maybe you're worried about Mitchell just being tired, putting so much on him, let Strus bring it up. Say one thing, you try to take that ball away from Strus, he'll nail you with an elbow in the middle of the chest. I mean, he's a good ball handler. He's strong. You don't have to have your point guard whatever bring it up. I remember Lenny Wilkins, it's an old thing story, but when Mark Price would get worn down or whatever, he would have Craig Ewell bring the ball up, and he ran. Price learned he had never run off picks in his life till he came to the NBA. Wilkins taught him how to run off picks on the baseline and things like that to get open. And so, and Ewell, who was 6'6", kind of like a little like Strus and athletic, and he would be able to do that and just take some of that ball handling pressure off of them.
So if I'm a Cavs fan and I'm watching Garland play, this is the thing, and Jimmy Watkins wrote about this the other day in his column, but what I'm seeing from Darius Garland is like an amazing play followed by a turnover.
Yeah.
And then a great play where he dishes to Allen for a dunk, followed by throwing a terrible pass that ends up going out of bounds. Like, I feel like it's home run or strikeout with him at this point. And like, let's be honest, the Magic, there's a reason they're 22nd in offensive efficiency. Like, they can't shoot. Like when, like even after the whistle blows and they throw up shots, like just to get a shot in after a whistle blows, yeah, those are bricks. Like, they're not even making those.
No.
So like, I get it, but like, I'm just envisioning in the next series. And I know that the Celtics lost to the Heat yesterday, but there's going to come a time when teams are going to realize that Darius Garland does not like to go into the paint hard with the ball anymore. And they're going to start pressuring him out, and those threes might not fall. And I think down the road, this boom or bust Darius Garland version that we're seeing is going to haunt the Cavs.
It could.
What do you think of that?
It could, because their best backcourt is Strus and Mitchell. You're not going to see that start or whatever, but that's their best backcourt. Garland, right now, a big thing that you're seeing is he'll kind of drive in, get past the foul line, he goes up in the air, and he has no idea where he wants to pass it. That's where these crazy passes come from. And some of them also are caught by Mobley or somebody else, but they're such horrendous passes that they can't do much of anything with them. And he isn't shooting much. He used to have kind of a floater from 10 feet or whatever. He isn't throwing that up. So he's struggling. But I will, you know, we have to give credit in a game where people are not making outside shots. He is. So that could be kind of use him in that area. And he doesn't, I know he's a point guard, wants to handle the ball, but sometimes it's not such a great idea.
No, you're right. If he keeps making threes, no problem.
Like, yeah.
That's going to erase a lot of issues. I just, if he doesn't make the threes, he's got to bring value mm-hmm. somehow. And I'm just trying to envision where that value comes from. And we've seen flashes of it, but the consistency just has to get better. It just has to be more even.
Yeah. Or he's just going to be, he's just not a, he's not an all-star. He was a couple of years ago. He's not now. So,
yeah. And, you know, in the playoffs, Terry, like if you waste five possessions against the Orlando Magic, like mm-hmm. you can win. You're going to win the game. But if you waste five possessions in the next series or in the Eastern Conference Finals, like you lose. You don't win that game.
And to be fair, you know, remember, Orlando ranked third in defense. They rank second in forcing turnovers in the NBA. This is what they do. They make teams look bad. So it's not as if they're playing, you know, like Indiana guards nobody. They just want to outscore you. So they're facing a tough defense in Orlando. And as you said, the problem is they can't shoot. The great thing is how the Cavs have taken a challenge on the boards.
All right, Terry. Well, game three tonight in Orlando at 7. That's Thursday night. Then they are in Orlando for game four. That's Saturday at 1 on TNT. And then Tuesday, they're going to take a home trip. Yes. Back home, and there's no tip-off time for that one yet. I'm guessing it'll be 7, but we will see what the TV people say, and that will be game 5 if necessary. So, all right, Terry, let's move on to the Browns. It's draft weekend, and you wrote over the weekend about what you called the Deshaun Watson tariff and how the Browns will be done paying that this weekend with the end of the 2024 draft. Why don't you get into the Watson tariff, what you meant by that, and kind
all
of
all right, before we start, means. Do you know what a tariff is?
Absolutely.
It is what?
When goods come into the country, it'll get an extra tax to put to make it more competitive with the homegrown goods. Did
yeah,
I get it right?
For example, yeah, if you brought in a car, I don't know if they're still wanting cars from Japan, but I know there's tariff on goods from China. You bring in a car from China and they go to sell it, they'll throw $2,000 on it, and that's a tax. Okay. The tariff, which I put on the Watson trade, because this feels like it never ends. This is the third year in a row with no first-round pick. You know, there were a total of 6 picks traded in that one. And finally, they are going to be past that. I love how Andrew Berry, who, look, he's half out of the analytics school anyway, and how they prized those first-rounders, rolled out the – well, you know, the hit rate on these first rounders is only like about 50%. And so, I mean, they're not a sure thing, and on from there. And the Rams, you know, 2017, they haven't had a first round pick since 2017 till this year. Okay, fine. I mean, that's one of those things. This is your job and you got to do with it. And of course, the point is if Watson ends up being the guy who was a 3-time Pro Bowler in Houston, you know, heck, you give up more than 3 first rounders, but you know, we're still waiting on that. But in terms of the draft, sometimes people don't view the effects of the tariff on draft picks the right way. Well, they got past the last 2 years without it hurting them in this year. But see, those picks that you're taking sometimes take a couple of years to develop. And along with the fact that they're just nice to be able to trade them to get good players on rookie contracts, and they cost them that. So that was all my point. And you know, we're going to see how this plays out, but that's your tariff. But at least after this year, it's over.
Well, and you mentioned in your column, Terry, the Russell Wilson trade that the Broncos made, and they gave up first rounders in 22 and 23 and a pair of second rounders and a few players, Drew Lock, Shelby Harris, Noah Fant. And now they've given up on Russell Wilson, who has gone to Pittsburgh, and he's going to be there with Justin Fields. And that got me thinking, like, all right, 2 years in Denver for Russell Wilson, 2 years in Cleveland, for Deshaun Watson. And at this point, like, if I'm looking at these numbers, I don't see much difference, Terry, in terms of the bust factor here. 2 years in Denver, Russell Wilson started 30 games, right? Completed 63.3% of his passes, 42 touchdowns, 19 interceptions, 90.9 quarterback rating. Deshaun Watson has started 12 games in Cleveland. He's gone 8-4 in games that he's started. 59.8 completion percentage, which is less than Wilson's 63.3. 14 touchdowns, 9 interceptions, and a QB rating in Cleveland of 81.7 compared to Russell Wilson's 90.9 in Denver. So, like, so far, even with people calling this Russell Wilson deal a bust, I think it's been a better – it was a better deal for Denver with 2 years of Russell Wilson than it's been 2 years of Deshaun Watson. I don't think the Browns would argue that. They're looking long-term. Yeah, they're looking at a 10-year window. Right. But, I mean, this is not good so far. I think everybody knows that.
Exactly. Yeah, the difference is that they bailed out on Russell after 2 years and took an $80 million hit on their cap over the next whatever that is. It gets complicated. The Browns are not doing that. But another difference is Russell Wilson is healthy. They say Deshaun is healthy. And Deshaun, at his press conference, went into great detail on his broken bone in his shoulder and also mentioned a partial tear of the labrum, and then went on a weird rift about, and I'm just saying that because it seems strange, that he possibly could have broken his shoulder in the Tennessee game and then played two games after that with a broken shoulder. I mean, maybe, David, but I would think when they were looking, remember they were looking at all the micro tears in the shoulder, and they're doing MRIs there. I just find that hard to believe that he had a broken shoulder back then.
We may never know.
No, I don't think we will.
Could be one of those only in Cleveland stories 10 years now.
But at least starting next year, they're past all the tariffs that they paid in all those picks, and they could go back to business as usual. Finally, towards the end of his press conference, Barry did admit it will be nice to have a first-round pick next year. So, and I give him credit for that. So the big thing will be, I have to admit, though, reading Watson's account of his shoulder problems was somewhat alarming.
I don't think you were alone.
Whenever he broke it, he broke it. And the labrum thing, and then, you know, when you've had some tears in your rotator cuff there, they heal, but you've got to be very careful these to get them back. And so that's why I wrote a lot in the Southern column about that. They should take pictures, video cutups of Patrick Mahomes, who I think has missed like 6 games in 4 years or something like that, and show them to Watson. Says, we're not saying just stand in the pocket and throw the ball away, not get hit, but look at how this guy doesn't end up in a hospital, and you do. So
they're talking about all that stuff. Yep.
Yeah, they have to. Okay.
Well, you've been talking about the draft, Terry. It's draft weekend. Do you have any inkling of what the Browns might do? They have the 54th pick in the second round on Friday night. We have no idea, right?
No. What do you like about it? I'm tossing it over to you because I have to admit I have not paid much attention to the draft.
Yeah,
whatsoever.
And I don't know that Browns fans are all that engaged with the draft this year because of what we just talked about. I'm trying to think like the front office, and I'm thinking, where does this team need some depth? Who can play special teams? And if you're playing Patrick Mahomes in the AFC Championship game, what is the one thing you don't want to run out of? And you say this all the time, Terry. It's like pitchers. I think they're going to take, again, we don't know who's going to be there at 54 if they're going to trade. I think they're going to be looking for corners and safeties who can give them some good special teams reps. Somebody that maybe can develop. I think they're a little light in the back end at safety. And Grant Delpit has his own injury history. I think they're going to try and stock up on some defensive backs and safeties to give them some depth and to give them some special teams guys that they can rely on. That's just a general feeling I have. I don't have anything to base it on. And, you know, I don't even think the Browns are like, well, when we get within 10 picks, we'll start looking at who we're going to take or what we're going to do. They don't even know how it's going to go down tonight, heading into tomorrow night. So no, I don't
they
know.
Probably have a circle of at least 20 guys that they think could be there at 54. because of how strange it gets. The linebackers, a good linebacker would be help. And remember, they did trade. I think they traded up to get JOK. JOK went in the second round. I know that. So, you know, they have done that. They lost Taki Taki. I thought Taki Taki was a pretty good player for them last year.
Yeah, he really rounded out his game as he stayed here and stuff. So I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe linebacker. They'll get some linebackers.
Maybe they don't necessarily have to be second round pick. Of course, he has traded those second round picks too.
And might do it again. So
he might do it again.
Anyway, draft starts tonight. It runs all weekend. The Browns will be picking first, and not first, but their first pick will be on Friday night as it stands right now. Hey, I did want to mention real quick, Terry, this kind of came out this week, but Kevin Stefanski and his family are starting a new charity. Mm-hmm. They're calling it the Keepers Foundation, and it's kind of named after the verse in the Bible about being somebody's keeper. They're mm-hmm. having a couple of events, and we don't need to get into one of them. June 6th, they're having it under lights with Coach Stefanski and friends. But I just thought it was worth noting because I don't think Browns fans have seen a coach be here long enough to start something like this after his fourth season.
Yeah.
And it's, I think Browns fans are probably very thankful that they have a coach that is doing well and has been here 4 years and is starting something like this after 4 years and thinks it can be here for a while. So I think that's quite a change for Browns fans to get used to. So I just thought I would mention that.
And he must be figuring an extension is coming because he's in the final year of his contract coming up. But so that's good.
Okay. So Terry, let's talk about your faith column from last weekend. And you wrote about people having kind of life after death experiences. And I know you got some really strong response, which you're going to turn into your column for this upcoming Saturday for your Faith and You column, but some really striking responses.
I mean, it's a thing I've been interested in for years, from stories people have told me to, like you look at Psychology Today and other, you know, secular research things, and the near-death experiences, there's a lot of common themes to it. You know, someone is on the table, their heart has stopped, or at least close to that, the white tunnel, the white light, approaching something. The Bible calls it a city on the hill or whatever you want, where there's comforting music. Oftentimes they see people that they knew who were deceased, like they were waiting for them. People nearing death have talked about seeing dead relatives, that kind of stuff, visions of them. You know, I'm sure some are drug induced, but there's so much to this that there's something to this. So I remember this lady came up to me at Walmart that I've known forever. It's not my friend Gloria passed away, but it was one of our mutual friends. And she had been taking care of her 90-some-year-old father for like 10 years. And she said, I know you'll believe me when I tell you this story. And she talked about how her father kept seeing somebody at the edge of his bed. This is like in the last week of his life. And then how he would go into the state and then he would come back and talk about, you know, his dead brother and somebody else. And he said, they keep saying, I'm waiting for you to come home. They keep saying the same thing. And then he passed away and she just asked me what I thought. I said, that fits in with a lot of different stories that people have. And I don't discredit any of those. And I'm sure, I mean, there have been a couple books that written like The Person Who Went to Heaven, and they find out it wrote this whole book. It became a Christian bestseller. And I forgot which one it was. So don't take that title. And it turned out to be a fraud, you know? So there's always that stuff. But, and she's not a churchgoer, by the way, or anything. I mean, she always just liked, as Gloria and I would pray for her when her father was driving her nuts and money was short and all this other stuff, a long-term care thing. But she said, it just opened my eyes to a lot of stuff. So I wrote about that and a few other things. And then I got some really interesting emails from people. So that's going to be this upcoming week's column.
Yeah, I was looking at the column today, Terry, when I was giving a quick read, and this woman, Loretta, said she's a retired federal investigator, and she was asleep, and she saw her grandmother descending steps with her arms out to greet her, and she ran to meet her grandmother in the dream, and then she was awoken by a phone call, and it was her mom telling her that her grandmother had just died. Like, That's crazy stuff.
There's a lot of stuff. Yeah. I mean, everybody has a vision every week. Okay, fine, whatever. But
the timing of that one, just like, I was just like, yeah. Whoa, that's so
and
weird.
And I think she put that in to say that, look, I'm not a total whack job here. That's, in fact, if anything, I'm wired to doubt as a federal investigator. It happened to me. I mean, one guy, Harry Watson, was a guy who was a mentor to me in jail ministry. Bill Glass was my first. And then after that, Harry is a salesman for years for Procter & Gamble and played the stock market. Not a big I see angels every moment guy at all. In fact, he only had the one vision, but he had had a major heart attack. He said at one point, they said he was gone. They're beating on his chest. He had the tunnel, the white light, the approaching of the city on the hill, not getting in, and seeing several people from his church, all deceased, who had been very helpful to him. And he, as he would say, brought him into the comfort of the Lord right after he'd been divorced and feeling lost. And then he came back. And then he just told me that story once. And then I talked to him. He had gotten ill about 12 years later, and I called him, and, hey, Harry, how you doing now? He said, I'm coming to the end. He goes, I'm ready to go. I've seen it. And he died the next day.
Yeah, so, I've seen it.
You can do whatever you want.
Common,
yeah.
I've seen it. The common theme.
Yeah.
I've seen it. Yeah. Interesting. Well, catch Terry's Faith in You column. If you haven't read the one from last weekend where he kind of laid all this out, check it out. And then some interesting reader stories in this Saturday's column, Terry's Faith in You. So, all right, Terry, we still have a couple of letters, emails from fans about why they're Cleveland sports fans. We're down to the last couple of these, but I'll read one of those. And then we got a couple of good foul ball stories and we'll share those right now. So, all right, this first one is from Vince Granieri. And Vince says, I'm 67 years old and a Cincinnati resident for the past 25 years, but I was born and raised in Akron. My earliest Cleveland sports recollection was heading down the long, dark portals at Old Municipal Stadium to emerge in bright sunlight and see the greenest grass on God's earth way back in 1963. I saw many games in person thanks to my dad, including the Mick and poor early win as he struggled to win number 300.
Oh, I remember that. That was before, yeah. Oh, Lord.
Was that a long?
It was. He was older. He's older. He was heavy. He was fat. Trivia question. I believe a guy named Jerry Walker had to pitch the last four innings to save it for him to make sure he got the win, but he finally got number 300.
No kidding, huh?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Vince continues. He says, my grandpa, though, really kindled my love for the game. His favorite player was Rocky Colavito. We watched countless games on TV together. I also remember being bundled up under many blankets watching Jim Brown and the 63 Browns play in that cavernous place. I'll never forget the Sugardale hot dogs and the unique mustard. I left the area for good in 1979, but I never lost my affinity for the Tribe, Browns, Cavs, Crusaders, Barons, Forests, and whichever Cleveland sports team was playing. I had full season tickets for the Tribe, New Browns, and Cavs for many, many years, all while living no closer than 150 miles and as far as 600 miles away. I saw World Series games in 95, 97, and 16. In person, and virtually every playoff game of the Cavs in the LeBron era, including the watch party for the victorious Game 7, where I was at the queue watching with the fans. As you can see, loyalty is important to me, and I've also been a loyal follower of your sports columns and your faith columns. You speak to your listeners and readers in a way few can. Thanks for continuing to connect. And Vince says, finally, last question, Terry, from Vince. He says, why do the Guardians want to keep Kwan in left field? He seems like a prototypical center fielder. Small, speedy, good bat control, great defense. Left field is where the lumbering, power-laden guys play, like Greg Luzinski, for example. Talk about a difference in players there, huh?
Well, I think the same reason they like to keep him in is at second base. If you have a guy just so exceptional at that position, you know, why move? It might take something away. All right, my memory of early win is correct. After giving up four runs to Kansas City, Wynn made an exit to watch the rest of the game from the Indians broadcast booth after his roommate, Jerry Walker, came in the sixth inning to protect a 7-4 lead.
So he just went up to the broadcast booth. That's the
best. And afterwards he said, Jerry Walker, relieve me, and pissed like a man possessed. There you go.
Trying to save it for his
roommate. Why I remember Jerry Walker or whatever, I don't know. 63, I was like 8 years old. So,
You have a mind like a steel trap, Terry.
It still goes right on my tongue sometimes, and it should stop whatever's coming out next. But
all right, thanks for that, Vince. We appreciate you sending that in. I know you had to wait a while, but I'm glad we got to your letter. This next one is a foul ball story from Michael Sekarak. I hope I said your name right, Michael. And Michael says, I don't remember exactly when, but I do know how and where and who for our foul ball story. Section 157, row X of what is now Progressive Field with my son, about age 5. We waited all day for a ball, sharing one glove with no success. Late innings. We decided to leave and were in the exit tunnel when loud rock music started blaring. Let's go back and see what it is. The first appearance of John Rocker as an Indians relief.
Oh.
Of course, rock music would be playing. Waiting in the aisle at the top of the section, a foul ball came over our heads into the deck above, hit a railing, and caromed straight down into the glove now on my hand. I opened the glove and showed the ball to Al, who with big, wide eyes asked, do we have to give it back? He still has the ball. So thanks for that, Michael. That's a good one. A John Rocker reference as well for a bonus. So. And our last one is from Brian Varley from Elgin, Illinois. And Brian says, hey, Terry and David, I look forward to the podcast and Terry's insights every week. I am a lifelong Indians, Guardians, and Browns fan. And although I'm not a fan of the NBA, I do love Terry's knowledge of basketball and his take on the Cavs. I moved away from Cleveland area in 1983 for my first job, but I've never stopped following the Indians or the Browns. My foul ball story, I took my older daughter to her first major league game in 1995. We live outside Chicago where my wife and I moved in 1989. We, like so many Indians fans at the time, could get tickets in Sox Park much easier than in Cleveland. We arrived early enough for batting practice, and sure enough, a foul ball came our way down the first base side. My daughter ran and picked it up. I honestly never had been close to a foul ball before, and now my daughter gets one on her first trip to a game. But the best part is that Kenny Lofton came over and started signing autographs along the foul line, and my daughter got her ball signed. Kenny has been her favorite player ever since, and now I had a lifelong fan to share my love of the Indians and now Guardians baseball, a love she is now passing on to my grandchildren. Keep up the good work. I look forward to hearing your takes on this transitional baseball season and the ongoing saga of the Browns' quest for a Super Bowl. Best regards, Brian Varley, Elgin, Illinois. Thanks for that, Brian. Kenny Lofton, of course, is from East Chicago, which is right around the lake from Sox Park there. It's probably about half an hour away. And they named a street after him in East Chicago. Did you know that, Terry?
I did not know that.
Where his house was, yeah. I used to work near there. So thanks for those letters, everybody. If you have more foul ball stories you want to send us, and as we mentioned earlier, things that annoy you in sports lingo, send them to sports@cleveland.com. Just put Terry's talk in the subject line. So, all right. Hey, our last thing, Terry. We usually do a book of the week here. Is there any book you want to throw out you've been reading or something you want to tell people about?
No, my brain is frozen.
what about Vintage Cavs?
Oh yes, Vintage Cavs. Yeah,
that's a good time to read.
That's
that
what I was going to play. I can't even remember to promote my own book. That shows how bad it is. Yeah, Vintage Cavs, and it's a good. It's primarily about the Cavs of the 80s and 90s, where they, where they were coming with the Nance Doherty, Hot Rod Williams, that group. That team, by the way, three times it lost in the first round of the playoffs, twice to Chicago, and then also they ran into some other problems. But it took them three times knocking on the door to finally get to the second round, and that was in 92. They went to the conference finals that year. So this team reminds me a little bit of that. I hope they don't go through the same struggles, but a younger team built together, and they were patient with Lenny Wilkins and that group. And the problem is, in that whole era there, they got knocked out of the playoffs. This goes even after Fratello took over, five times by Michael Jordan, five times. So you really don't know what you had other than you didn't have Michael Jordan and those Bulls. That's what you know.
All right, and if you want to check out that book or any of Terry's books, I think the easiest place to go is just terrypluto.com, and you can see all of Terry's many, many books in there. So, all right, I think we're good, right, Terry?
That'll do it.
All right. Let's see. Do not forget to sign up for Terry's newsletter. We're going to be making some changes to the newsletter. You can just go to cleveland.com/newsletters and click on the box for Terry. You just put in your email and you will get Terry's newsletter every week, including everything he has. And we're going to, like I said, last week, we're going to have some announcements very soon about that. So I think we're done. I'm feeling like early win, Terry. It's about time to go to the press box and let Jerry Walker finish.
Yeah,
you can be the Jerry Walker. But thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next week. Terry's talking.